Reverend Robert Drynan, a congressman who was known for his opposition to the war in Vietnam and the draft, and was an international human rights activist, died yesterday at the age of 86. He'd been ill with pneumonia and congestive heart failure. Drynan was elected in 1970 and served in the House as a Democrat for Massachusetts for 10 years, until Pope John Paul II barred priests and nuns from serving in elected office. Drynan subsequently became the president of Americans for Democratic Action and a professor at Georgetown University. He continued to live in the housing for the university's Jesuit community. I spoke with Robert Drynan in February of 1988, a little more than 7 years after he left Congress. Well, it's clear that you've remained very committed and you've remained an activist in spite of the fact that you're no longer in Congress. Do you feel that you fit into a tradition of activist clergy?
Oh, I'm certain that I do. Going back to the clergy in America who helped to abolish slavery, beginning in the area where I originated in Boston and New England, they were abolitionists there. Most of them were clergymen. And I think that was one of the first great victories in American life for the clergy, with the laity and with all of those that are committed to human rights, and they did, in fact, abolish slavery.
How much freedom do you have within the Jesuits to decide what career you're going to pursue and where you're going to teach?
Well, no, the Jesuits are very, very open on that. They take an individual and they try to build upon his talents. And that I decided to go to law school, and that was agreeable to my superiors. They approved of it. I became dean at Boston College Law School and retained that position for a dozen years. And then, as I mentioned, I was 10 years in the Congress. Now, if I do say so in praise of the Jesuit order for a moment, there's about 5,600 American Jesuits, very gifted men, and generally speaking, they try to do what is agreeable to their talents. Obviously, not everybody can do exactly what they want because we have these institutions to operate.
Now, doesn't canon law forbid a priest from entering politics?
No. Canon law says that a priest may do so if, in fact, he has the permission of the local bishop. That, however, has been altered somewhat. In 1981, the canon law was tightened so that no priest or nun may now have a governmental position that has civil power, whether the power is legislative, executive, or judicial. There still is some out in that, but generally the new canon law does, yes, approach what you suggested as the rule.
Did you have any trouble getting permission from your bishop?
No, I didn't, because in 1970 this seemed to be a very good idea for people, and the late Cardinal Cushing thought it was a very good idea, as did my superiors. And at that time, I think that the clergy were moving into new things. That was 5 years after the Vatican Council had closed. The war situation was desperate. The Catholic bishops were opposed to that war. Indeed, virtually every religious group in the country was opposed to our participation in Vietnam. And that I was certainly qualified to be a member of Congress. And there was an opportunity there, and people thought that it was a very good idea.
You were the very first priest to serve in Congress.
Well, there was one a century ago who was appointed to be a non-voting delegate from Michigan. But yes, you're quite right that I was the first voting priest in 200 years.
You know, you actually voted against church doctrine in a way a few times while you were in Congress. I guess what I'm thinking of particularly was your vote on abortion. You voted in favor of public funding for abortion. And, of course, the church opposes abortion. Was that a crisis of conscience for you? Did you feel that the church was pulling you in one direction and your duties and conscience as a congressman were pulling you in another?
No, there's no fixed one position on that particular legal question. The Catholics are deeply divided in the Congress on that, 60-40 one way or the other, that the Catholic Church has no official doctrine as to what is the constitutional way. Under Roe versus Wade, every woman in America has a right to an abortion, and that should the people who are poor, should they be denied the means that are necessary to get that abortion? And the people who favor Medicaid funding say that, no, it would be discrimination, it would be a violation of equal protection to deny that. So I think that's not a question resolved by Catholic teaching.
One of your goals when you served in Congress was to get rid of the Internal Security Committee, the committee that was formerly HUAC, the House Un-American Activities Committee. And your strategy was to actually get appointed to serve on the committee and then try to do away with it from the inside. Can you explain what your strategy was?
Well, it was very clever, if I do say so, that I succeeded Congressman Lou Stokes, who had been a liberal on that committee. And the liberals had said that, well, we have to have somebody to monitor the committee. I went and monitored it, and this is the terrible committee that goes back to the 50s and 60s, the House Un-American Activities Committee, that had slandered all types of people, that had files on 750,000 Americans in the halls of Congress itself, that I harassed them, if you will, for 3 or 4 years, and then, if I do say so, very adroitly managed to persuade the Democratic leadership not to appoint any members to the committee. And you can't have a committee without members, and as a result, the whole membership died, and no funds were appropriated, and all those files have gone off to the archives for 50 years. It was an unnecessary committee. It should never have been established way back in 46, and that I was very happy that I, with a long lot of others, were able to finesse it.
You were also one of the people who initiated impeachment proceedings against President Nixon.
I filed the first resolution, apparently, of impeachment on July 31st, 1973, not, however, on Watergate, but on the clandestine bombing of Cambodia. I think that that particular resolution made it thinkable. And in August, when the Congress was in session, was not in session, many newspapers and radio stations across the country theorized about that, and I think it just made it thinkable. And that shortly after that, events began to move. The House Judiciary Committee, where I served, began formal hearings on the possibility of impeachment in December of that year, and as everyone knows, in June and July 1974, Richard Nixon resigned.
You know, it's interesting to me. You're obviously a man who doesn't just accept authority. I mean, you question authority. You try to have our president impeached. But when the Pope gave you the directive to not run for office, you honored that. You didn't consider leaving the church.
No, I think that's a different question, that when you become a priest or enter the Jesuit order, you do take a vow of obedience, and that's the full understanding, that they can send you anywhere, they can send you on the missions, and the clear understanding is that you are a part of the operation, if you will. You submit your will to them, and you take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. Consequently, when they said that we don't think that it's appropriate for a priest to be in this office, that worldwide decree obviously was binding. There was a priest in the Parliament of Holland who had to leave, likewise a priest in the legislature of Colorado, and another priest in the Parliament of Canada. There are several nuns involved, and two because the canon law was extended to them. Some of them did leave their order, and the two or three priests in Nicaragua did not comply with this, and they are not out of the priesthood. They can never take the priesthood away from you. It's eternal, but that they may not exercise their priestly functions.
Was obedience hard for you to learn and accept? And I ask you that as someone who knows how to challenge authority and challenges authority in our government on a regular basis.
No, I think that it's separate in the church, that you agree ahead of time, that you put your life at the disposition of religious superiors, and they can send you to the missions or teach in a high school or work in a parish. You, in other words, say, I offer up my life as in sacrifice for what the religious order or what the Catholic Church wants to do. It's just a question of policy. When the Holy See said that we think it's best for the Church that worldwide priests and nuns do not hold any governmental position, I can understand how they could come to that particular judgment.
Even though you might disagree at times with the Church, I suppose you'd never consider leaving it.
No, I you're quite right. That I think that when you say that the Church has made this decree, it's a solemn decree on their part as to the best way to deploy their spiritual forces, if you will. And that the Catholic Church or the Jesuit order could say, we're going to close these colleges or these high schools, and that we're moving on to do other things.
Yeah, you've been on a lot of human rights missions to different parts of the world. What can you do on those missions?
Well, I think it's very important to go. For example, in Chile just a year ago, we went and spoke to all of the church leaders and gave them encouragement. We let the government know that we're watching. And actually, it was very effective that certain people who had been exiled from Chile were, in fact, able to go back because of our intervention. Obviously, we work with groups such as Amnesty International and the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. You don't get immediate results all of the time. Sometimes you just sow and others will reap. But I think that it's a very important lesson in world citizenship that the people in Chile should know that a lot of us care about the repression in that country, a country that has had a long democratic.
Reverend Robert Drynan recorded in 1988. He died yesterday at the age of 86.